Hi, my name's Mike Nagrant, and you're listening to Chicago Magazine Chefs on the Grill.
4, 3, 2.
One more time.
Hey, welcome back for another edition of Chicago Magazine Chefs on the Grill podcast. Chefs on the Grill is a collaboration between Chicago Magazine and Hungry Magazine, and you can find an archive of all of our podcasts at www.chicagomag.com or www.hungrymag.com. This month we sit down with Barry Sorkin, one of the guys behind Old Irving Park's barbecue sensation, Smoke. Sorkin left a job in IT to follow his dream of the perfect Q, and now he's bringing his discoveries to the masses. On a recent Friday night, with temps almost below zero, there was a line out the door for the Memphis Rub Baby Backs and Tangy North Carolina-style brisket. At Smoke, they treat all the meat right, and the sides, which are usually an oversight at other joints, are spectacular. Creamy mac and cheese and slow-roasted beans with smoked burnt ends and caramelized onion will have you waiting in the cold for more. Enjoy the interview.
You're formerly an IT guy, right?
Well, sort of, yeah. I worked for an IT services company, started in their marketing department, worked in a lot of different positions for that company, ultimately ending up on the account side, managing some of their large accounts. But never was very technical. I always managed to stay away from the technical side of the business.
Uh-huh. How do you find your way from IT to barbecue?
You sit down with your wife and you say, "What do you think about me quitting my, cushy, high-paying job and going into the world's riskiest business?" And you wait for her to respond. And that is what I did. I sat down with her. I said, "I'd really like to do this," and she said, "Go for it."
Was it originally barbecue, or was it just the idea of a restaurant or food?
Over the last several years, I've had a couple of different restaurant ideas in mind, but, I just love barbecue, and that's kind of what I always ended up coming back to.
What's the first barbecue memory you have, or the conscious memory that, anyways, you probably had barbecue before you realized?
I grew up on Heckey's. Uh-huh. In Evanston, and obviously what we're doing is a very different style from what he's doing, but that was where I really learned to love barbecue. And I think when I was a kid we had Carson's ribs, and that was kind of a special treat, but it wasn't until I had Heckey's that I realized that there was more to barbecue than just sweet sauce and on a slab of boiled ribs.
Was there a quintessential place that was sort of they say every wine guy has a bottle, was there a quintessential barbecue place? Was there a moment where you're like, this is it, or this is...
Well, I don't know if there was a moment like that, but there are certainly places that I, hold in high regard, and most of them out of state. I mean, we had some phenomenal brisket. We went down to Texas, a place called Louis Mueller's. It's been making brisket for 50, 60 years the same way. Just a phenomenal product. And we did a nice tour of the Texas barbecue country, around the Austin area. Just some good stuff down there. Some great rib places in Kansas City. Really liked Oklahoma Joe's. Really liked Lil Jake's. Really liked... LC's down in Kansas City. So there's a lot out there. And one of the things that's great about barbecue, I think, is that it's not, this is the best place for ribs. You go down to some of these places in Kansas City, and literally every one is different. Mm-hmm. And, it's not one better than the other. It's a little bit different product, and you can enjoy them all.
They say it's the easiest way to start a war is to start talking about barbecue.
It's part of the reason we got into this business. I love the passion that comes along with barbecue. What can you think of any other kinds of food that people will fight over and argue over? And, ours is the best and yours is garbage. And, it's really, people are so incredibly passionate about it. And we see it here. Some of the things that we have on our menu, we knew going into it that, not everybody was going to like every single thing on our menu or love every single thing on our menu. Some people are going to say, this is awful. I hate this style. I like a different style. And that's fine. Of course, we'd like everybody to love us, but it's not the nature of the beast. And I'd rather have some people love us and some people hate us than have everybody, indifferent about us.
Yeah, I think one of the things I saw, I don't know if it was in your manifesto or it was on your website, but you said some places try to be everything to all people, and that's not what you guys are, and I thought that was really interesting. interesting. Although one of the things I think about is, you know, I've been reading some of the forums and seeing what people are saying about you guys. And
yeah.
I know some people have brought some stuff about celiac disease to you. And I think that, you know, one of the things I was thinking about is, like, one of my good friends is Muslim. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I wondered, is there a place for beef ribs and, you know,
yeah.
things like that? Like, how do you think about that? You want to get good at what you're doing? And then...
Exactly. You know, a couple people have mentioned beef ribs to us. And a couple other things. You know, for the beef people, we do point to our brisket. But you're right. I mean, it was real easy writing that manifesto to say, you know, this is what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to do it, and, you know, the public be damned. This is our way of doing things. Live with it. But when you're actually in the business and you're operating, you've got customers that are good customers, and they, you know, they're friendly and they like you and they like what you're doing. They come and say, you know, boy, but, you know, I'd really like to see this. There is a real temptation to start, you know, expanding the menu, and I think there will probably come at a time when we can revisit our menu and add a thing or two. But one of the things that I think is important to what we're doing is that we keep the menu focused enough that we can concentrate on everything that we're doing. It's you know, most places that you go to, I think, most barbecue places, they have a couple of things that they do well, and then because they want to try to be all things to all people, they'll put, like, cheeseburgers on the menu, and they'll put, you know, chicken breast sandwiches on the menu, and, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that, but I think the more you do that, the more you lose focus on what your core really is. And we're trying to kind of stay true to that, at least for right now. But there's no question. I had someone come in from the neighborhood the other day who said, I'm so glad you're opening up a restaurant in this neighborhood. I'm thrilled to have you here, but God, you got to have a veggie burger. And I
smoked veggie burger, of course.
Of course. And I so badly wanted to be able to help her out and say, yeah, you know, we're glad to be in the neighborhood. We know that the neighborhood needs restaurants. But, I mean, I can't promise somebody that there's going to be a veggie burger on our menu. It's not really what we do.
Yeah. How did you choose Old Irving Park? I mean, it's not the hot happening hood necessarily, but it's a great place.
Yeah.
You know?
You know what? I live about 10 blocks away.
Okay.
And I moved here about 3 years ago. And the first thing my wife and I noticed is it's a great neighborhood. It's got great, nice people, lots of nice new families, lots of, you know, nice houses, a lot of development going on. But you could starve to death here. Literally, you know, there's a handful of good restaurants, and I'm not trying to diminish them. There are, you know, Sabatino's and a couple of La Villa, a couple of mainstays in the neighborhood. But there's such a lack of any sort of, you know, culinary diversity here. I mean, there's really very little to choose from. And we just thought, you know, this would be a great place for a little barbecue joint. I mean, the neighborhood is looking for almost anything right now. And, you know, we thought, you know, you want to go into, you know, there's no secret how risky a business the restaurant industry is. You go in with every possible advantage. You know, and we were going in hoping that we'd be great, but never helps to be the only game in town, or never hurts, rather, to be the only game in town. So, you know, that was part of it, is there's really not a lot around here.
Yeah. It's not like you're opening a hot dog stand.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and you know, you can open up in Bucktown or, you know, Wicker Park or Lincoln Park or Lakeview, one of the more obvious locations, but restaurants just go in and out there, in good restaurants. They open and they close. I mean, you can open up a restaurant in Wrigleyville, be open for 6 or 8 months, and nobody will even have noticed you, because there's such an incredible density, and there's so many. A restaurant opening there is not really an event. It happens all the time. This was really newsworthy. Someone's opening a restaurant where? You know, and when we got that a lot, and people, from the minute we put our sign up, people started, you know, while we were under construction, people were popping in and saying, you're really opening up a restaurant here? That's great. You know, people really took interest in it.
I like that the restaurant's on the corner of Grace, too. I wonder, is there some divinity involved in that? Or that was just...
Well, you know, there are people that are religious about their barbecue.
Yes.
That is true.
That's true. So you talk a little bit about going down to Texas and going to some of these places, and so it sounds like there was kind of like a barbecue trip a little bit to research. And you know, sometimes you hear, like, people kind of make bones about the fact that, you know, the barbecue community, you know, likes to protect their secrets. And I wonder, you know, did people welcome you with open arms? Were you able to get back and see some of these operations and learn from these guys? How was that?
Yeah, some of them we were. In fact, you know, there's one guy, a place called McKeska's right outside of Austin. The guy took us in, showed us his kitchen, showed us his operation, you know, comped our meal. People were really great out there. You know, they're not going to give you their recipes. They all tell you the same thing. You know, what's in your rub? Salt and pepper. You know, that's about what they're willing to tell you about their, yeah, exactly, about their recipe. But we found, you know, we told people what we were doing down there. They were really interested in talking to us and offering us good advice. And we just found people to be really helpful. I think, you know, again, barbecue more than other cuisines, there's sort of a community. These people all see each other at competitions. They all see each other at, you know, barbecue fests and rib fests and things like that. There really is a sense of community. I don't think you get that with, you know, burgers.
Right. So. Yeah. One of the things I was struck by when I ate here Friday night was you expect the barbecue to be good because that's what you do. And if you're not doing that, forget about it. But, you know, the sideline, of course, are the sides. And they often become the sideline at places. And I guess I was struck by this fact that, like, you know, we tried them all, and every single one of them was singular on its own. And you know, it was like the barbecue beans, they had like caramelized onion, it was sweet, and the burnt ends, and it was, you know, it was just, and then the mac and cheese, you know, usually mac and cheese is like really bad craft, if you're lucky. And there's, I don't know if there was multiple cheeses in it, I don't know how you guys do that, but it tasted like there was like a rich cheese in it that you wouldn't normally have. So the detail is really there, and I wondered about that process, like how you guys got to that. I mean, you're not really a chef, are you?
Well, you know, first of all, it's great to hear. I appreciate that, you know, all those positive comments. And I did, a couple of years ago, I went back to culinary school, and I've, you know, done a lot of cooking in the past. But yeah, this is my first attempt at being a professional chef. But, you know, we really wanted to take the sides seriously, and again, that's part of the reason our menu is so limited. We wanted to have a handful of things. We didn't want any of them to be throwaway items. And again, it's not to say that everyone's going to love every one of them, but we wanted them all to be distinctive. We wanted them all to say, oh, okay, some effort went into this. They, whether it's my favorite mac and cheese or not, I want people to say they are doing everything they can to make a great mac and cheese, and it shows. I don't care for it. I'm not a big fan of this kind of cheese, or I'm not a big fan of this or the other thing, but they're not putting something on my plate that they didn't care enough to work hard at. That's what we really wanted to do. We did it with our coleslaw, the barbecue beans. I mean, I like to think that they're all distinctive.
Were there, like, tens of hundreds of versions? How did that...
There were a lot of versions.
Yeah.
We did spend a lot of time on the sides. I think the beans... we probably spent less time just because I think we kind of hit it pretty close on the first couple of tries with what we were trying to get to. Mac and cheese took us forever. You know, this is a little surprising. People are surprised to hear this sometimes because everyone goes home and they know how to make mac and cheese. It's just something people, they don't think twice about. But we really literally spent weeks and weeks and weeks trying to get the macaroni and cheese right. And part of it is that, you know, in a restaurant environment, not everything, you know, you're cooking for your family, you make the mac and cheese, you put it in a pot, you put it on the table, and you serve it and you eat it. In a restaurant environment, you have to have it available to serve, you know, throughout the day. You're not making a batch of mac and cheese per order. You're making a batch and, you know, periodically throughout the day. And you've got to have something that's stable enough and something that holds well enough, something that doesn't lose, you know, quality over time after you've made it. So it did take us a bit of time to get that right.
And you have, is it four other partners?
Yeah.
So do you guys vote on that? Like,
you know, it's not a formal vote per se, but I will tell you that every single item on our menu has been debated and argued about and fought about ad nauseum. Mm-hmm. Until we finally got to something that everyone was comfortable with.
Where'd you go to culinary school?
Kendall.
Okay. And that was while you were still working? Or?
It was while I was still working. They have an evening certificate program that I did while I was working my day job.
Mm-hmm. What did that bring to the table that you didn't have before?
Well, I suppose the people at Kendall would be upset with me if I said, not so much. But I mean, and I had managed kitchens before when I was putting myself through school and kind of in between schools. I'd worked in a lot of restaurant kitchens. But I think what it brought is a little bit more of the sort of basic principles of cooking, of operating a commercial kitchen, some of the fundamentals that you just don't get out in the real world. You know, I think nothing against culinary schools, but I think there's a lot more to be learned from working in a kitchen than there is in culinary school, but it is helpful to have some of the foundation, some of the basics. So I think that's, you know, it helps you make decisions about how you're going to manage, how you're going to set up your cooking processes, and sort of make the transition from I know how to cook something to I know how to make it in a restaurant environment and serve it all day long and those kinds of things.
I like this idea of culinary school training and doing barbecue. It reminds me of like Doug Stone over at Hot Doug's.
Love Doug. We love Doug.
It's like we need more people. You know, it's like everybody loves, you know, Alinea's really good and, you know, Grant Atkins and all that, but you know, who wants to spend $700 on a meal and dress up all the time? You can't do it. It's
exactly.
Not economic, you know, and it's nice, but you still want the touch. You still want food that's good and accessible. So that's
yeah.
Good, you know,
that's true. And I never had any aspirations to be a fine dining chef. I mean, and I don't know how people do that. I mean, I look at that stuff and it amazes me that people can prepare that sort of thing. But it also amazes me how little effort some people put into simple things that really ought to be done well. Things like barbecue, there's a handful of things that need to be done correctly to get barbecue right. It's just so rare to see people putting them together.
What are those things? You know, one of the things I was thinking about was, I don't know a lot about the smoking process here. I know there's debates about, you know, is a Southern Pride smoker good? I think that's what you guys use.
Yeah.
And, you know, versus a certain aquarium style or pit style, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm curious what your thoughts are on that.
We spent a lot of time on this, and, you know, there's a couple reasons we went with the Southern Pride. One is that it's really, we think it produces as good a product, if not a better product, and certainly a more consistent product than anything else out there. And I was skeptical of a really automated smoker, which is what the Southern Pride is. It does a lot. It takes a lot of the guesswork away from it. And admittedly, it takes a lot of the artisanship out of it. You don't have to sit there and tend it. You don't need a pit master standing over it for 24 hours a day. So I was skeptical of it. And we went out to our local distributors out in one of the north suburbs, and I said, you know, we're thinking about getting a smoker. We're opening a little restaurant. We're going to be doing brisket. We're going to be doing ribs. We're going to be doing pork shoulder, chicken. And he said, well, come on by. I'll make some of each of those for you. And we went in there, and he had done a brisket, a chicken, a pork shoulder, some ribs. And, you know, you had to separate whether I liked his recipe and the rub that he used from, you know, the job that the smoker itself did. He got a really great texture. He had really good smoke flavor. And that's really what you want, you know. Then the rest is up to the individual. Then it's, what do you rub it with? How long do you cook it for? You know, what kind of meat do you buy? What kind of sauce do you pair with it? Those kinds of things. But you know, I think you get it to taking the human error out of it. You know, you're going to get a consistent product. In my backyard, you know, I'd much rather use an offset smoker and sit there and, you know, add wood and charcoal and find the right mix and balance and maintain the temperature manually. And that's what I do in my backyard. But in a restaurant environment, and it's really all about consistency. And barbecue is among the hardest things in the world, I think, to get consistent, because every single piece of meat is a little bit different. I can put up 14 briskets. Some of them are done in 10 hours, some will be done in 12 hours, some will be done in 15 hours. Some of them are going to be a little drier, some of them are going to be a little juicier. Every single piece of meat is a little bit different. And even for brisket in particular, within a piece of meat, you know, there's a dry part and there's a juicy, fattier part. And you got to, there's some artistry there, but if you can at least start with, it's all been cooked the same way, then I think you're a couple steps ahead.
Yeah, I like the idea. One of the things you talked about on your website was this idea of slicing the brisket to order because it dries out, and also even with fries, you know, putting them in a clamshell and sending them out the door.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
That's like that degrades the quality of things, and so the more you pay attention to that.
I'll tell you, we came really close to not having fries for a number of reasons. That was one of them. But once we decided to have fries, we really kicked around the idea of just telling people, you know what, we don't do fries to go, only do fries for here. And we got a little scared about it. I think if I had the courage, I would have done that, because I see people taking fries to go, and I just, you know, try to get them to eat them in the car on the way home so that they don't degrade too much, because, you know, few things are worse, in my opinion, than cold French fries.
Well, there's that guy in Arizona, Pizzeria Bianco, I think, Chris Bianco. he won't do delivery or
is that right?
Pizza because, in his opinion, and if you're honest with yourself, the quality does degrade. And so he'll only serve it, you know?
I admire him for having the courage to do that because we kind of chickened out. He said, you know what? People are going to be really upset. How do you tell people, no, you can't order that? You know, we chickened out.
And in my comments, I was talking to Al, one of your partners, that one of my comments Friday night was that, you know, the baby backs in the St. Louis, we had half a rack of each and tasted them side by side. And I'm not sure I would go back and order the baby backs because the St. Louis, you know, they're meatier, but they're just as tender the way you guys treat them. They're not.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people will go away because the perception is, you know, with baby backs you're going to have a much tender rib, and you know. But I know you guys do the St. Louis cut where you got to get rid of the knuckles and things like that. But you know, I wondered if there was some debate about that even. You know, do you offer a baby back or not?
There was quite a bit of debate about it, and you know. The true barbecue rib, I mean, you go to Kansas City and Memphis and all the rib towns, nobody's eating baby backs. I mean, it's very rare to find people doing baby backs there. It's kind of a Chicago North Side thing. And we did debate. And again, we were trying to find the right balance of being, you know, being sort of purists and also trying to create a place that, you know, people aren't going to be afraid of, or people aren't going to look at the menu and say, I don't like anything there, and don't even give us a try. So we did. We went on and we went and put both of them on the menu. And I think we've been changing some minds about the St. Louis. I mean, on the north side, very few people are even familiar with a spare rib or a St. Louis rib. Honey One's doing spare ribs, and they're doing a pretty nice job. But other than that, I mean, it's really all baby backs. And I get a lot of people that come in here and say, "What is a St. Louis rib? What's the difference?" And I explain it to them, and they try the half and half, or they try, you know, an ad portion or a tasting portion of our St. Louis ribs, and they come up and say, "Oh, this is really good." And for a while, we were selling almost 40% of our rib sales were St. Louis ribs. And then Pat Bruno did in the Sun-Times, had a little comment about our baby backs, that they were very good. And then the numbers shifted back. Everyone started going back to baby backs because of that comment. But for a while, we were making some headway, changing people's minds.
Yeah. And that'll fade from people's memories, and maybe you'll go back.
Yeah.
The other thing that's kind of glaring is rib tips. They seem to be on all of, you know, Lem's, Leon's, et cetera, et cetera. How about the decision not to do that here?
Yeah, and a lot of people have asked for rib tips. A lot of people have asked for rib tips. And, you know, I like rib tips. I think there are a lot of good places in Chicago to get rib tips, and they're very much a Chicago South Side barbecue thing. And that's not really what we're doing, you know, which is not to say we'll never do it. I just remember our concept was to bring, you know, elements of Memphis, Kansas City, Carolinas, do like a real Southern barbecue as opposed to, you know, try to emulate what currently is Chicago barbecue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wondered about that. Is it a Midwestern barbecue now? Because you're taking all of those, and you know, I think it maybe was the manifesto, this idea of like jazz, or you know, how in the Great Migrations from New Orleans,
yeah,
how everybody came up to Chicago, and then it became Chicago style blues and Chicago style jazz. And I guess in some ways that's the same thing with food, is that you guys are making your own way.
Yeah, it's very possible. I mean, what we're doing is very much a hybrid. I mean, our brisket is a Texas-style brisket. Our pulled pork is, you know, not exactly the way they're doing it in the Carolinas, but certainly influenced by the Carolinas. I mean, the sauce that we're using with our pulled pork.
You get the vinegar in there.
Yeah, it's a kind of a Western North Carolina sauce, and our ribs are, you know, kind of a cross between the dry rub that you get in Memphis and the sort of thicker sauce that you get in Kansas City. So we're just drawing on all those things, and who knows? I mean, maybe there will emerge a sort of a new barbecue style that can call Chicago its home. Yeah, who knows?
You talked a little bit about buying meat, and I wondered, you know, how you guys think about that here, and what kind of, you know. You know, everybody I think is aware of, like, if you're buying beef, there's prime and those kind of things. So what do you do with pork product?
We're getting the highest quality products that we can find. We're getting certified Angus briskets. We're getting our ribs through a Wichita packing. And we're just looking for really good quality meat. I think it's hard to make great food if you're starting with the wrong base product.
Was that a taste test thing as well? Did you cook up a bunch of different meats?
Yeah, we got samples from a number of different places and a number of different grade levels. And you know what? You get what you pay for. The lower grades, who knew? Not as good.
Yeah, there you go. There's something to be said about stereotypes sometimes.
There's something to be said for stereotypes.
One of the things I was struck by is with all the attention to details of the sides and the sandwiches and the ribs and things like that, I'm struck by, as I look over your shoulder, there's house recipe real iced tea. So not that there's anything wrong with that, but you know, the next step based on how your quality that you guys are, the quality that you guys are putting on, is, you know, where did you draw that line? You know, why not make like a really good iced tea brewed in house, you know?
Well, you know, all right. We actually tasted this and thought it was pretty good.
Yeah,
we did. I'll grant you that that's a little bit of a concession. I sure would have liked to brew it in-house. We're a pretty small startup. I mean, you know, there's five guys kind of pooling their money, taking out a pretty sizable loan to get this place done. And, you know, for every single thing in a restaurant, there's a piece of equipment that you need to buy to make it happen. And, you know, we didn't have really either the space or the budget to buy a full piece of equipment to brew iced tea for one, you know, beverage. We wanted to have sweet tea. We think, you know, that's a nice, a good southern thing. And if we didn't find one that we liked that came pre-made the way this one does, we just wouldn't have had it on the menu.
Mm-hmm.
We may get to a point where we were making our own, but we had to kind of decide where to put the effort and where not to put the effort. It's a great question, and I wish I had an answer that, you know,
no,
I was totally comfortable with.
Yeah.
But it was a concession.
I'm not here to ding you for it either. It's just,
yeah.
it's an interesting juxtaposition because you guys, clearly, I mean, you know, the people, even people I've talked to, generally speaking, the same response. So it's not just me being like, oh, everything's good or whatever. It's, you know, collective sentiment from, you know, even the food forums, like LTH forums, a lot of people have been talking about how what's really striking is how everything is so good. So, you know,
it's a great point. And, you know, admittedly, it's something we kind of felt a little bit wrong about. But, you know, to spend an extra, you know, couple grand on the running the water lines and getting the iced tea brewing equipment, it seemed like that might be somewhere where, you know, you're not really going to get the bang for the buck. Yeah, there was, I was going to say, there's, it used to be this place, we're talking about compromise, where you draw the lines, a place called Mimi's Specialty Deli. It was a little sandwich shop on Montrose that almost nobody knew about, but it was one of my favorite places in the world. And one of the reasons I like it so much is that this woman who was operating at Mimi was absolutely uncompromising in every way. And it was her undoing. I mean, it was part of the reason the place never really worked out, because she was selling, you know, what I thought was one of the greatest sandwiches in the world, but she was selling, you know, lunch at a little sandwich shop for two people was $40. I mean, it was everything was incredibly expensive because she wasn't willing to make any compromises. She wasn't willing to say, you know what, I don't necessarily need, you know, Presidente butter or, you know, whatever, the $12 a pound butter for my sandwiches. I need, you know, nobody's going to notice the difference. Nobody's going to be able to taste the difference. She didn't know how to make those kinds of things, or maybe knew how and just chose not to. But, you know, she had a very loyal following, but it was about 12 people.
Yeah.
But they were incredibly loyal. I was there a couple times a week.
I mean, that's what they say about, like, guys like Thomas Keller or something at the French Laundry in California, how, like, yeah, you know, that's why you're paying $175 a head or $200
right.
a head, because they do everything to that degree, but there's a market for that.
Exactly. It's hard to convince people they should be paying that kind of money for a turkey sandwich, which is what she was doing. And it was a great turkey sandwich. Don't get me wrong. I loved it, and I was happy to pay it. But the average person is going to look at that and say, who the hell's going to pay $12 for a turkey sandwich?
So no Kobe brisket in the wait you.
No, somebody mentioned to me that it's, and I admittedly haven't investigated it, but someone told me that you can actually get it for not quite that expensive because there's not a tremendous demand for Kobe brisket.
Right. You know, everybody wants the filet.
So there's a piece of the animal that nobody's really buying. So the price is not, you know, it's still expensive, but not proportionately to what other cuts are costing.
Right. It's like, you know, what is it now, like short ribs and like oxtail, which were traditionally cuts that were like $1 a pound or something. Now you just, you go there and it's like, you know, $5, $6, $7 a pound, you know, and you're like, what?
Well,
because it became so popular. Yeah.
And that's barbecue has its roots in that. I mean, the reason that we barbecue, that people barbecue the cuts that they do, because, you know, barbecue grew out of a lot of really poor communities. And these are cuts that are incredibly tough unless they're cooked for 1,000 hours. And so, you know, you look like at a brisket. If the brisket's not cooked low and slow, or, you know, under very slow or moist heat or something, you know, one of those really long, painful cooking methods, it's almost inedible. Same thing is true of pork shoulder. Same thing is true of ribs. So it's barbecue very much has its roots in that same kind of evolution. And, you know, there was a time that, you know, ribs cost next to nothing for that reason.
So yeah.
There's no meat on them, and they're hard to cook.
Yeah, that's true. One of the things I was looking at, the woods that you guys use, I know you use a lot of apple wood.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed the brisket was smoked with oak, if that's still the case.
Yeah.
Was that a function of having to have something that was durable, low and slow, as opposed to using the apple wood, or is it taste characteristic?
Actually, I probably shouldn't say this, but it actually was also a compromise, because what we really wanted to do was our pork products, our ribs and our pork shoulder over apple, and we wanted to do our briskets over mesquite.
Mm.
But you can't get mesquite. At least I wasn't able to figure out how to get large quantities of, you know, mesquite logs into Chicago. It would have cost me more to have them shipped than it was costing me for the briskets. We tried a couple of different woods and found that oak, while it's not, I don't think, an incredibly, you know, it's certainly not identical, doesn't have the same characteristics as mesquite, does give it the same kind of punch that I think you get from using mesquite. So we're using oak as sort of a replacement for mesquite, and because we've only got, you know, we have to cook our pork shoulders and our briskets together, we decided to kind of make this wood cocktail using both of them, so you get the sweetness from the apple and you get a little bit of the punch from the oak. And we really found that the oak doesn't seem to overpower the pork and the ribs, which is what I was concerned about initially. So, you know, our original plan was apple for the pork products and oak for, or our mesquite rather, for the brisket, so we had to make some adaptations, and this is what we wound up with.
What are your wood demands like? I mean, what do you go through, like cords in a week or something?
No, it's actually, you know, one of the nice things about the Southern Pride is that it's pretty efficient. I mean,
yeah,
it really only takes a handful of logs to smoke a batch of brisket and pork shoulder. So we're going through about, you know, maybe a half a face cord every week or two.
Mm-hmm.
So not as bad as you'd think.
Yeah. The forests are safe for now. Although, with the lines out the door.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's very early in your development as a restaurant. It's almost unfair to even ask the question, but I wonder, you know, do you have a sense that if this works, you want to have more locations, or you want to just focus on this one location, make it the best? How does that?
It's a perfectly fair question, and it's one that a lot of people are asking us, particularly as they're waiting in line, going, you know, maybe another one of these if I don't have to wait in these lines. Right now, our focus really is getting this place, you know, stabilized. We really thought we were going to have a lot more time to learn how to operate this place. We didn't think we were going to get this busy this quickly, and we're thrilled that we are. But, you know, there are a lot of internal things, a lot of operational things that we're trying to get right. I mean, some people that have been here and are really super busy nights have seen what looks like some confusion in the kitchen and seeming a little bit overwhelmed, and it's because we are. So our first focus is trying to get some of those things fixed and getting this place a little bit more operationally stable and a little bit more efficient. And when I say efficient, I mean getting food out a little faster. And, you know, right now we're still making a couple mistakes. People are, for once in a while, carry-out orders missing something. We're trying to solve some of those problems, and not really looking ahead. I mean, certainly, you know, once we solve those problems, then we're going to start looking at, you know, what are some other opportunities. And I'm not sure we want to necessarily expand to multiple units right away, or whether we want to try to build a little more catering business and see if we can do a little bit more with the location that we've got. All of my partners are just adamantly opposed to chain restaurants. We just don't, you know, and it's just a personal thing. I've never liked them, and most of my partners agree with me. All of my partners agree that, you know, when you start overexpanding, or when you start creating, you know, distributing your product out too broadly, it gets either diluted, or you lose control over the quality, or, you know, bad things just happen when restaurants overexpand. So we're very cognizant of that. And our goal, you know, nobody goes into the restaurant business to get rich. Mm-hmm. We went into the restaurant business because we wanted to make really good barbecue, and we're doing that. It'd be nice if, you know, we could make a living at it.
Yeah. Make enough money so your wife is not freaking out.
Exactly. But, you know, we didn't do it to get rich. So we don't want to get greedy. If we can get this place up and running, sure. If we can find ways to make a little bit more money and maintain the quality, we'd, of course, do that. But we really want to be true to the product. And, you know, I think it'd be unfair to our customers not to.
And you can always get bigger here if you need to.
Yeah, well,
or maybe not.
Some challenges there as well. But
I wondered about this idea, too, of, like, not having grown up, you know, I obviously love barbecue, but not necessarily, like, working in the culture or being, like, a full part of it. This idea of not being afraid to break rules because you don't know what the rules are. You know this idea of, you know, you just do what you think is right. And do you find that that's the case in terms of what you're doing here? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I do think that's true. I mean, as an example, we're not finishing our ribs on a grill like a lot of people would do. We're finishing them in a conveyor oven. And we just like the result that we got out of that. Now, some people would look at that and say, well, that's not how you do ribs. You know, that's not, you know, unconventional. And, well, that's fine. I mean, we're not, there's two different ways to be a barbecue purist. You can be, you know, a purist in that you're remaining true to old ways of doing it or old processes or things like that. Or you can be a purist in that you're focused on just what the end product is. And if there are better ways to produce that product than what's been done for 40 or 50 years, I'm okay with that. I don't have any problem with trying something new, trying something different.
Was there, like, a guru or, like, a guy who, like, was just really, like, big influence on your learning about this barbecue and what you're doing?
I've actually went out and took a class with a guy by the name of Paul Kirk out of Kansas City, self-proclaimed Baron of Barbecue. And he's won nearly every competition there is to win, Memphis in May, Kansas City Royal, you know, multiple times. And he's been a big influence in some of his recipes. John Willingham, another one. So, yeah, I mean, there are a lot of people out there doing good barbecue. And the more of it you can get a chance to taste. Mike Mills is doing a nice job.
How about the decision to do a vinegar slaw versus mayo slaw?
Yeah, we get every at least once a night. There's one or two people that come to me and say we hate your slaw, and I'm, you know, again, I'm kind of okay with it as long as it's only a couple of people.
As long as they hate it and they're not in the middle.
But. Exactly, I'd much rather have that. And you know, our decision to do it was not because there's anything wrong with a creamy coleslaw, but again, we wanted to be distinctive. We wanted to be a little different, and I genuinely think that for barbecue. And, you know, a nice creamy coleslaw goes great with a corned beef sandwich or a pastrami sandwich. But I think because barbecue is so heavy, it's just nice to have something that kind of cuts through that. You know, then the light vinegar, the sharpness of the vinegar, I think does a nice job of cutting through. It's almost like a little break from whatever else you're eating. You know, you're eating all this other really heavy, full-flavored, kind of fatty stuff. And it's just nice to take a break and have something that's light, refreshing, and crunchy.
How about the name, Smoke, O-Q-U-E? I'm sure you get that question a lot as well.
Yeah, and almost nobody pronounces it right.
I know, I heard somebody saying, I want to say Smoke.
A lot of people said Smoke. I've heard Smoke U. When we were at the restaurant show this past year, and one of the girls in a really short skirt handing out samples of some beverage, I can't remember exactly what it was, looked at our name tags and said, Schmookie? So a lot of people pronounce it incorrectly. It was actually one of my partner's wives came up with the name. And we had spent, you know, about a year putting the concept together. And fairly close to when we were getting ready to really start construction, we were still struggling with the name. Mm-hmm. We had had, you know, three or four other names. Nobody was really wild about any of them, but we didn't have anything better, so we were kind of going with them. I don't remember who first said the words, just how much is smoke. I don't remember who said that. But you know, you run into some trademark issues, and certainly somebody out there is already doing a barbecue place with the word smoke in it. And I said, oh, so is there some kind of clever, creative way we could spell it? And one of my partner's wife said, we're not S-M-O-Q-U-E. It's kind of, there's another little pun in there.
Yep.
Some people think it's clever. Some people think it's idiotic. Some people think it's confusing. I don't care if they like the ribs. I don't care what they think of the name.
It's better to be controversial than nothing at all.
You know, there's something to it. If it gets people talking.
And you grew up in Evanston or North Suburbs?
Skokie. Yeah. Barbecue capital of the United States.
Barbecue capital, definitely, totally. lots of pork in Skokie. So,
yeah.
You know, if you knew it was going to be your last meal, you know, what would you eat? Have you thought about that?
Well, that would be a really big meal.
Yes.
I haven't thought of that. You know, I know I'm supposed to say barbecue, but I've been having so much of it lately that I think if I knew something was going to be my last meal, I'd probably try something different. You know, it might be a good Chicago dog.
Mm-hmm.
It might be a good Chicago dog with some fresh cut fries.
Mm-hmm. Do you get everything on your Chicago dog, are there certain things you don't like?
Oh man, I really wish you hadn't asked me that because I'm going to give the wrong answer.
You like
ketchup? No. That's sacrilegious. But this is it's still wrong. I get mine without mustard.
Mm.
I know, it's wrong. It's wrong, and everyone looks at me funny, and I...
I think it'd be worse, though, if you got it with ketchup. I think that's a minor sin, relatively speaking.
That I couldn't bring myself to do, but I want everybody who's hearing this, I don't know whether it's 12 people or 1,000 people, I want to go on record as saying I resisted the temptation to lie when I was asked that question.
Okay.
I told the truth, I get it without mustard, but I almost lied.
What's in your rub?
Like a lot of rubs, it starts with a base of salt, sugar, black pepper, some chili powders. There's a lot. Then there's a lot of things.
And then you have to kill me.
Then,
I figured I'd ask. Thanks for doing this.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this month's edition of Chefs on the Grill. We hope you liked it. And last month, we received some email feedback on our Rick Bayless interview, and we loved it. So if you have any thoughts on guests you'd like to hear or criticisms, please send them our way at MJNAGRAN@hungrymag.com. In the meantime, stay hungry.